Welcome to This Green Earth, a weekly talk show on environmental issues and concepts of sustainability. I'm Chris Cherniak. Nell Larson is away this week on assignment, so joining me as guest co-host is Carolyn Frankenberg. And our first guest is Linda Lawrence. She's with the Park City Nursery. She works at the Tree Ranch.
Park City Tree Ranch on Rasmussen Road.
And we'll get to that, what you offer out there in a little bit. But we wanted to chat with you about lots of things, spring planting and what works and what doesn't work this time of the year. And maybe some of the pests that we have to deal with up here in Park City during the course of the spring and summer, et cetera. But right now, of course, the big conversation, and we've talked about it on other shows and it's been in the paper, is this critter, this animal called a vole, okay? And it was interesting as we were chatting in the green room before the show, there are voles and there are moles, and these two creatures actually kind of cohabitate.
They do.
So let's start there. What is a vole? What is a mole? And how can I tell if I have one or the other or both?
Well, voles, I tend to believe, look like very miniature chinchillas. They are flat-faced, very teeny tiny ears, black eyes, no tail.
So more of like a field mouse.
Exactly.
Okay.
Moles tend to have a little bit of a pointier nose, but other than that, they look very similar.
Do they have, but moles have digging.
They have digging feet, and which is apparent with the damage that they do to your yard. They both live very harmoniously together underground. Moles will only eat insects, worms, and it's apparent that you have moles by the little mounds of dirt that you may see in your backyard, or in your yard in general. They look like little volcanoes, whereas the voles are apparent through the tunnel systems that you see throughout your backyard, and they do extensive damage. They will not only eat your They will eat pretty much all plant parts, from foliage to seeds to stems, roots. They'll eat your bulbs.
So that's what the voles are
doing. That's what the voles will do.
The moles
will dig around, but they are not doing damage to your plants. They are only eating insects and worms.
Unless
your dogs are going after them. Then you've got some more damage in your backyard. That's a different topic.
Yeah. Yesterday I was walking around my area, and I saw evidence of both, because like you say, I saw this big pile of dirt.
I have evidence of both in my backyard as well.
Okay. So they're out and about now.
Yes.
Okay.
Is it particularly bad now? Compared to other years?
Last year, voles tend to hyperproduce in some odd years. Last year was that first year, and it seems to have carried over into this year. And the problem with voles is they'll throw a litter out like every 30 days. So there are the population literally is almost equivalent to the amount of people that live in Park City.
Yeah.
You know, and a good way to control those is to, you know, if you want to do something naturally, adopt a feral cat. Or a lot of people just let their dogs have at it.
Right.
And then there are other options out there, but those are the two most natural ways to control it, other than the raptors themselves that increase in population as the vole and mole population increase in town.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that predator-prey relationship
exactly.
That works in it like a sine wave as the prey or in this case the vole populations increase. There's a lag time between the predators catching up.
And we have seen more eagles and hawks and owls than we ever have.
Mm-hmm. Really?
Yeah.
And you've seen that?
Anecdotally, I feel the same way.
Yes.
All winter long, I was spotting at least one bald eagle. I don't have the skills to tell if it's the same eagle, but it was out in Round Valley, just spending the winter there.
Okay.
And I've never seen that before.
Okay. And I've seen more evidence of owl activity or hear them at night where I live at Racquet Club Village. So there may be As expected, we're going to see an increase in predators,
yes,
which will help control that population. Okay, so what? So you're just saying that voles can actually nibble away at root structures
they
and
can.
The plant and the seeds. But you mentioned another interesting thing that they do through their tunneling.
They
that
tunnel
is bad.
Through roots, and I've seen them tunnel into root balls of trees, and that does a lot of damage to your trees. It will actually increase the amount of air circulation that is going through there, and if you don't have a good amount of protection for those root balls and those roots in the winter, which is when your trees
you
are,
snow.
They continue growing.
You mean protection
insulation,
of the snowpack.
Protection, yes.
Insulation, okay.
Those roots will tend to freeze-thaw, which ends up doing the most damage to your trees.
Okay.
Yeah.
So they decrease the thermal insulation that the soil would provide.
Correct.
Okay. That's really interesting.
Can that also occur if you have a very mature tree? Like
yes.
Like a really big root ball? And
I have seen it happen, but they tend to go more for the younger trees because they're juicier and just
yes.
establishing and throwing out nice, fresh, new roots. And a lot of things that I've seen over the winter, because they are predominantly, they do the most amount of damage in the winter when there's snowpack. This year, there was not a ton of snowpack, and I think they actually did more damage, because typically, I look at them as nature's little aerators. The little bit of damage that they would do in my backyard, I would actually just rake up, and that would be the best-looking grass in my yard.
Right.
I have no grass left at this point.
Right. They've damaged
yes,
that.
Yes, they've damaged it
so
that
what
extensively.
So what trees are most at risk? And what do they avoid certain plants and trees?
I have not seen them really avoid much of anything.
So deciduous, coniferous, it doesn't
mostly
matter.
Mostly deciduous. Yes,
yeah.
They go mostly for the deciduous.
The cottonwood, aspen.
The cottonwoods, aspens, even Canada reds. I've seen a lot of girdling damage, which is where they go to the bottom of the trees and they nibble off a lot of the bark.
Huh.
Oh.
And typically you see a lot of that with rabbits, but this year we've seen a lot of it with voles as well.
But maybe that's a preference compared to, say, pines or firs or spruce.
Yeah, I haven't seen it as much in the evergreens as I have in the deciduous.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Chris was talking about some very disturbing treatments that people have chosen to explore. Can you talk a little bit about what, you know, poisoning might cause in terms of ramifications? And
there are a lot of poisons out there. And as a dog owner, I just plead with everybody, if you are going to put poison out, that you follow the directions. Every homeowner that lives in Park City has at least one dog. And if you're going to poison, you need to be considerate of your neighbors, and you need to let them know that you're putting something out. But the biggest part of being a responsible homeowner and neighbor is to follow the directions on these products.
Right.
We do carry a product by High Yield called Mole and Vole Bait. It's a dry product that you put into the holes. And the biggest thing you want to do is make sure that you are closing those up. And you really need to be scouting your yard out to make sure that you find all of them. Because I know, as a dog owner, I've had voles end up in the middle of my yard that obviously were poisoned by somebody else that made it all the way to the middle of my yard and died there.
Right.
And the last thing you want to do is have your pet or somebody else's pet get a hold of these. But with the High Yield, it has no secondary kill, which means if your dog or cat or even another animal in the wild ends up getting that kill, that vole that may end up showing up in your yard, they might feel a little sick to their stomach, but they're not going to die from it.
Right. But there are a lot of other poisons that do have secondary or tertiary
right.
impacts that have that unintended consequence of affecting the dogs or the cats that might
correct.
Find a vole that or a mole, let's say, that is easy prey because it's
correct.
Ill. And then the other common predators, you know, the coyote that might come along, the hawk, the night hawk, the kestrel. The owls, they're all at risk when we apply poisons like that that could impact them.
Correct.
And that's what happened at where I lived in Racquet Club Village. A dog accidentally, you know, came upon a colorful stick that turned out to be a rodenticide that wasn't applied properly.
Correct.
And that's the critical thing. Like you say, Linda, if you want to use a poison,
be responsible. Yeah,
it requires that you put the poison in some portion of the hole.
Correct.
Or cell location.
And you close those up.
And you close those up. Otherwise, you put the rest of the ecosystem at risk.
Correct.
So that's one thing about the poisons.
What about the impact on the water table and runoff and that type
of
thing?
That's a possibility too. That's another reason why you shouldn't really be using synthetic based pesticides or rodenticides like that, or pesticides or anything that's synthetic based. Now there are more organic based. Natural oil based.
They're more castor oil based.
So that's those are the active
Correct.
Ingredients?
Yeah, castor oil tends to be one of the main ingredients, along with clove, garlic, rosemary, thyme, or peppermint oils. Those are the predominant ingredients that you'll find in a lot of those products that are on the market, as well as dried blood. You know, dried blood is a big deterrent.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
Dried blood.
What? So I can buy that?
You can dry it.
Dried what blood?
Typically bovine and pig.
And that's something they avoid, or is that?
We have it powdered and liquid. But I've seen that as an ingredient with the castor oils, and it's part of that mix that goes into the deterrent. And there are granulars out there that you have to water in. We carry a repellent. Mole and vole repellent that is a hose and sprayer that is castor oil based that you apply to your lawn, but it's not a one-time thing. I mean, it's something that you really need to stay on top of.
Yeah. Okay, so that's
the thing.
It
makes
persevere.
It very unpalatable for them. It makes their food unpalatable.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
But it's not.
I don't want castor oil either.
It's not a permanent fix. You still have to go out there.
And that has to be broadcast.
Yes.
Out.
Yes.
Okay.
So, and it's through water.
Correct.
They spray it.
Correct.
You know, Nature's Balance, I think, is the name of the
That's an
pest
organic.
Company. Well, we've had in past years serious earwig issues and ant colonies. And in the last few years, I found a company that sprays this. It's like different natural oils.
Clove, typically.
Clove. And oh my gosh, after they're done spraying, it is just heavenly.
It smells wonderful.
It smells wonderful.
Oh, really?
And it completely eradicates the problem.
That's clove-based.
It's a clove-based,
okay.
And it just smells fantastic.
Okay.
And they come once a month. It's great.
All right. Hey, if you just joined us, we're speaking with Linda Lawrence. She's an assistant manager with Park City Nursery and works over at the Tree Ranch.
Correct.
On Rasmussen Road. And we're talking, we've been talking about voles and moles and pests like that. And yeah, they're pests. Yeah, but, you know, on the other hand, they were here before us.
Correct.
So we truly want to have environmental awareness and stewardship. We have to understand, we have to share this. And if these are voles or that are digging up your Kentucky bluegrass, well, boo-hoo. Too bad. Don't grow Kentucky bluegrass, you know, if you want to avoid that problem. And Linda, actually, you are kind of tearing up some of your KBG.
I am ripping up my backyard.
Congratulations. And what are you going to replace it with?
I am putting gravel down in a certain area. I'm going to put in raised beds and become a little bit more sustainable. I'm going to start there, and I may eventually explore the option of some artificial turf.
Really?
I may. I'm kind of over the voles.
Before we get away from the voles, there's one other method is trapping, and you guys offer traps, too.
There's a catch and release, but then you're just giving them to somebody else.
Releasing your political enemy's yard.
Well, there's also trap and poisons that can be inside the trap.
Yes.
So that's another means of control. But that's also has a risk to it too. If another predator or prey gets inside the trap,
Correct.
Or they get out of the trap or something, you got to handle the trap too. But those are the different types of options. And I guess at the end of the day, how about this? Are there plants that you could put in amongst, let's say, a garden or so that they will avoid? Because I know there's some plants that animals
marigolds or yeah.
You know, I would tend to believe that if rosemary and thyme oils are a predominant part of, and garlic are predominant parts of these products out there, I would probably tend to believe that if you plant those products in your yard, they're going to help deter as well.
Okay.
You know, there is another option out there that I've explored that is a sonic ground spike.
Oh, talk about that.
Yeah. It will emit not a high-pitched tone, but a vibration that they don't like, and typically those will work for about a 30-foot radius around any one of those that you actually pound into the ground. And I have had limited success with those. I probably needed to put more than the one into my yard. But if you do that in conjunction with the hose and spray or even a product that we carry, which is not intended for this use but helps deter as well, Milorganite, it's a great all-purpose fertilizer.
Yeah.
That really helps to deter them. If you do a lot of these natural things, eventually, I think, and you keep maintaining that, eventually they start to go away. But, you know, right now, typically in the spring, they go away anyway. I mean, I think I've seen one in the last 2 weeks as opposed to the 12 that were, you know, that I could visually see in my backyard doing the tango. So
winter damage thing.
And yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's interesting. Okay. Well, and I have faith that the environment and, you know, biosystems work in a way that they'll help catch up and help control
Correct.
The populations too.
Correct.
And that's a good thing because we'll see more owls and hawks and and other raptors like that. Hey, we all like those around.
Oh, we love seeing those.
Okay. All right. We got a few more minutes. So let's turn the conversation to, it's Arbor Day,
Correct.
Friday the 24th.
I know.
So what do you guys suggest as good plantings for a tree, if we want to plant a tree? What are the top three or five trees that you recommend to plant around here? And then go to the tree ranch to pick them up.
Deciduous trees, you know, we tend to sell the most of our cottonwoods, aspens, and Canada red chokecherries. Cottonwoods are extremely drought tolerant once they've been established, very wind tolerant. They will handle any condition you can throw at them.
Okay, so they don't require as much water.
They don't. You know, everything requires water up front for about the first three seasons.
But they're native.
But they're native. And after that, they become very, very drought tolerant.
And is it a deep water type of requirement?
Yes, you definitely want to be training your trees. You want to be putting them on slow drips for maybe like an hour.
Okay.
And in the beginning, we tell people every 5 to 7 days.
Yeah,
is a good baseline, and as the season progresses and the tree becomes more mature, you can start backing that off to 7 to 10. And as the tree starts going into dormancy, you can be doing maybe every 2 weeks. And a lot of this also really is dependent upon how much water we receive. I mean,
well, given that, are there trees around town that you see that you say think that, you know what, those trees require a little too much water? Those are more non-native trees that we should avoid planting?
Yeah, like the flowering trees, like the crabapple and the...
You know, crabapples are amazingly drought tolerant once they are established.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But again, they need to be on a regular watering cycle. But you don't... Nothing likes to be sitting in standing water. Nothing likes to have their feet wet constantly.
Oh.
That's, you know...
So will you, I mean, obviously aspen, you see the hillsides, there are certain organisms that appear to be coming on now in the end of April, middle of April. Is that early? I see green up on the mountainside. Does that seem early?
This is an exceptionally early year.
Is it?
Yeah. Oh my gosh, I cannot believe the amount of perennials that I see out there that are blooming and that typically we don't see even start to show any signs of life till mid-May.
Sure.
Really?
We are so far ahead. And you know, what you see on the mountain is greening up because that's where the water is right now.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And as the water trickles down, things will start to bloom and leaf out and bud based on where the water level is coming down to. So... Mm. Yes, this is an exceptionally early year.
Okay, we got a couple more minutes. Let's talk about some of the other pests that are common up here. Aphids, scale, different types of borers.
I will say that aphids and spider mites are always here.
And what are they doing? What's the harm they do?
aphids, what aphids will do is they will, and here's the funny thing, aphids live underground, and aphids and ants live harmoniously together, and the ants will carry the aphids into your tree. And what those aphids will do is they will feed on your tree, and that's where you start to get all of that sap. So if you start to see that your trees are really sappy and there's a lot of bees and a lot of bird action going on, you probably have aphids.
Huh. And are the birds there to eat the aphids?
The birds are there to eat the ants.
The ants that bring the aphids.
Yes, and the bees are there to eat the sap that is being produced by all of this action that's going on in your trees. So
okay, well, that sounds like a good deal for the birds and, and the bees, but not such a good deal
for
the tree because the tree is
tree.
Generating that sap as a
correct.
Response.
Correct.
And so it's under stress.
It is under stress.
So what's the treatment? What's the natural treatment?
The best thing to do is, and this is, you're going to laugh at me, is put some petroleum jelly at the lower 2 inches of your tree trunk.
Okay.
And it will keep the ants or even tinfoil from carrying the aphids into your tree. That's a great natural.
So slather it with
petroleum oil.
Petroleum jelly. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Petroleum jelly.
So it's a transportation. Block.
The ants are, they live harmoniously with the aphids and they carry them into the trees. And that. Mm-hmm. And if you have an ant issue, you're going to have an aphid issue.
That's fantastic.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And that doesn't harm the tree. It's just the petroleum.
It doesn't.
You girdle the tree with petroleum, but that's okay. The tree is all right with that.
Yes.
Perfect.
Yes. Mm-hmm. It's a great natural way to.
What about ladybugs? I see ladybugs for sale
amazing.
All the time.
Yeah. They do. They are also nature's natural way of controlling aphids, but sometimes there just aren't enough of them too. Maintain.
But I can buy them.
You can. We do sell them.
At nurseries.
We bring them in.
Okay.
Don't have them yet, but I have seen ladybugs out already. And I have seen aphids already.
Can they survive a winter up here? Can a ladybug make it through, or what do they do?
They might have to go underground.
I would imagine they go underground, but I don't have a really good answer for you. I'll have to do some research.
But you can't have enough ladybugs.
You cannot have enough ladybugs. Cannot have enough bees.
Enough pollinators, butterflies. And what? Last question then. What are good pollinator plants to put out?
Wow. Well, your crab apples are always great pollinators. And when you do crab apples, you always want to do two different varieties. And they will go and they will pollinate. Not only each other, but help pollinate your other perennials.
Mm-hmm. I've read that anything like a purple colored plant, lavender or something.
We
along
love
those
our
lines.
Lavenders. We love our salvias. Anything purple seems to do spectacularly.
Attracts bees.
Yeah, correct, and they do phenomenally here in Park City. But I will also say, on that note, that your salvias, your catmints, your lavenders, they are all natural deterrents to deer and to your larger predators that like to come in and eat.
So if I have a community garden, I might want to plant.
You definitely want to put some of those in. Because
salvias around there.
Correct.
When you say salvias, they're purple plants.
They are purple.
Okay.
And it seems like everything purple is a deterrent. So,
okay.
And a pollinator.
You can't have enough purple. All right.
Can't have enough purple.
All right. We'll leave it at that.
Fantastic.
A simple color. Linda Lawrence is with Park City Nursery and specifically works over at the Tree Ranch on Rasmussen Road.
Correct.
Your hours?
Currently, we are there 9 to 4, Monday through Saturday, and Sunday 10 to 4. Our hours will change as we get farther into the season. We'll be opening at 8 and stay open until 6.
All right. And thanks again for coming on and educating us more about voles and moles and what we can do about them. And we'll keep track of that.
Yes.
And we'll have an update and maybe at the end of this, at the end of the summer or so to see how things have changed. And maybe we'll have just great populations of raptors and owls and hawks flying around.
It's gonna be a great year.
That'll be good. All right, let's take a break for some underwriters, a couple of sponsors, and when we come back, Bruce Erickson's going to join us talking about Hazmat Day. It's This Green Earth. Stay tuned.
Assemble is proud to be a KPCW underwriter. Assemble offers executive offices which can be rented on a long or short-term basis, or a business lounge membership located in New Park. More information on the web at assembleparkcity.com or 435-709-7888.
Join us for the Mountain Life Wednesdays at 9 a.m.
We speak with the experts on topics related to health, like with Gretchen Reynolds from the New York Times blog, Well.
Fitness with World Cup champions like Kylie McKinnon and Mac Bohonen from the U.S. freestyle ski team.
And about lifestyle, like with TV anchor Dan Harris about how meditation changed his life. Brought to you by the doctors at the Park City Specialty Clinic,
Grand Valley Bank and Heber Valley Bank,
and Stein Erickson Lodge and Spa.
This is Tom Roney with Berkshire Hathaway Home Services Utah Properties, formerly Prudential Utah. We have been helping locals and visitors with their real estate needs since 1976 and are proud supporters of KPCW. More information can be found at bhhsutah.com or at one of our 14 offices throughout Park City.
Welcome back to This Green Earth, a weekly talk show on environmental issues and concepts of sustainability. I'm Chris Cherniak. Joining me across the board is guest co-host Carolyn Frankenberg. And also joining us in studio is Bruce Erickson. He is, among other things, a certified planner, president of four mountain advisors, I'll say.
That's correct.
And Bruce is here to talk about a few things. About planning and maybe talk about the NEPA process, because that's been mentioned lots in the as part of the Mountain Accord process. Maybe some touch on some wind energy projects you've been involved in. All kinds of Earth Day related. Since tomorrow is Earth Day, there's no shortage of environmental topics we can touch base with Bruce. But first, let's start with Hazmat Day, because that's a big one. It's an annual event. It's occurring next Saturday, May 2nd. Give us a little rundown on it, and we'll go into some of the details.
Sure, Chris. And this should be pretty close to near and dear to your heart, since you know the phrases of LUST and UST.
Yes.
And so Hazmat Day is a pretty good public-private partnership where Summit County, Park City, and Snyderville Basin Water Reclamation District all get together and do a little bit of the funding to collect hazardous materials that otherwise would end up in the watershed or collect in the landfill. And so last year was a big year for us. We filled up a 40-foot-long trailer with paint, somewhere around 20,000 pounds of paint.
Just paint?
Just paint.
Wow.
Because they bulk the paint up, then they take it down to Salt Lake, and they either remake paint with it or they have some other ways of certifying disposal of it. So one of the things that happens is Recycle Utah puts the volunteers together with the Sunrise Rotary Club, and we go out there and we collect this material. The downside of that is that Recycle Utah ultimately ends up taking chain of title for that hazardous material. Mm. And we have to carry that chain of custody all the way down to the certified disposal location. It's the same with mercury in thermostats. It's the same with mercury and radioactivity inside your smoke detector.
Right.
We collected somewhere between 10 and 12 5-gallon buckets of pharmaceuticals that otherwise would have ended up in the watershed, either mm-hmm. by people taking them or by disposing them down the drain. Mm-hmm. And Mike Lures out at the Water Reclamation District has a tough time getting that out of the water.
Right.
We also take TVs out there,
really?
Especially CRTs. We have a certified electronics firm that collects that material.
And what's in a TV that might make it hazardous?
Well, there's phosphorus on the backside of the screen. There's mercury. There's some other heavy metals inside the electronics.
I mean, heavy metals is in all electronics.
Yes,
it,
but they
basically?
Particularly collect in old school TVs. The okay. older, bigger version right. of the television is pretty nasty stuff mm-hmm. 150 years from now.
But okay. are people bringing in flat screens? Have they?
Oh, yeah. You'll see a lot of obsolete flat screen
we need to go
computer
there, Chris.
Monitors. You'll see a lot of, somebody goes out and buys a 60-inch curved screen, and they'll bring the 40-inch in and recycle
get
it.
Rid of it.
I went down and took a tour at MedTech. Yep. They specialize in electronic recycling down there, and I was astounded. Not just how many TVs that they're getting, but how many flat screen TVs. You know, how long has the flat screen technology been around? 10, 12, probably early 2000, so when it first came out. And people are bringing in, you know, recycling or handing off, you know, 40 and 50 inch, these huge flat screen. Back then they were huge things. And so that's big. That's just another item that has to be disposed of, or in this case, recycled. So what do we do with the flat screen TV?
All right, so MedTech is our provider as well at Recycle Utah. And we actually have to pay them to take our materials down to Salt Lake. You'd be amazed at the commodity mining that goes on at Recycle Utah on this basis, in that we are really subject to the vagaries of the market. So for example, if the world economy is growing, our market for recycled cardboard goes up and our values go up.
Okay.
As the value or the price of oil goes down, the value of our PETE number one plastics goes down as well, because it's cheaper to use new oil than it is to recycle for the plastic. So we have to follow the markets, and INSA is brilliant at this, following the commodity markets in order to fund these things. So it's about 20 cents a pound to recycle electronics. And we do that in Salt Lake with MedTech, and they're a certified recycler. And then they collect all the materials out, and they find commodity markets.
Right. They're literally – they have guys there who are literally breaking apart these TVs and other appliances.
By hand dismantling?
By hand, drills. So, I mean, they're just cutting them apart and pulling out the metals, the copper, the nickel, if there's other cadmium or zinc or other precious metals, and they're trained to look for it.
So what's the breakdown? What's the percentage of actual reusable material compared
to very small.
The trash that comes from
it? It's very small. You think about the weight of a TV, and you may be getting an ounce or two.
Yeah.
The Chinese have actually developed a method to get the copper wire out of your wires from your plug-in devices. So, you know, that's the hard part about recycling and commodity mining and doing what Park City Conservation Association does and what we do at the Hazmat Day is not only is there an incoming waste stream, but we have to figure out a way to have it go back out and then return back into the economy. It's that third leg of the stool that makes it very, very difficult, because if you're really recycling, there has to be a market for that recycled material and a product that can use it. So back to Hazmat for the day. That's coming up Saturday, May 2nd, out at the canyons, just like it's been the last couple of years. Just drive up. You don't even have to get out of your car. You can bring paints. You can bring motor oil. You can bring antifreeze. You can bring car batteries. You can bring old gasoline. Instead of dumping it out on the yard and watching it wash down the drain, the county gets rid of it for you. Pool and spa chemicals.
Okay.
Propane and white gas cylinders.
So that's acids and bases.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thinners, solvents.
Thinners, solvents, all those things.
Lacquers, stains,
all that deck chemical.
Caulking, adhesive.
Caulking, adhesives, glues.
Okay. What don't you take?
Well, we used to take mattresses, but mattresses are a bit complicated for a couple reasons. One is they tend to float in the landfill, and so you can't bury them. They keep working their way to the top, just like rocks in the middle of a ski run.
Or tires float as well.
Same. And so the folks at Summit County Landfill really struggle with mattresses, and they have found a company down in Salt Lake that will actually recycle the mattresses now. So we will take the mattresses, but there's a charge. It's a $10 charge. For each mattress set.
Okay.
And they'll drive them to Salt Lake. They'll recycle them correctly. I was going to say, if you really want to take a look, next time you're over at Recycle Utah, take a walk with one of the volunteers through the back of the house, and you'd be amazed at how many TVs and electronics are in the back room waiting to be recycled. You would be astounded to see the number of skis and ski equipment that we bring in.
Really?
We also recycle that. That has to go to Colorado, and that has a chart. We pay to have that recycled. And that's what we were talking about in terms of commodity mining, is that it's easy enough to figure out how to chop those skis up, but there's six or seven different kinds of plastic in your ski boots. And so without the ability to sort that plastic, there's no re-entry into the marketplace. All right. we're doing is keeping it out of the landfill.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So Saturday, May 2nd, I'll be there in my chief curmudgeon outfit, which is what I do when I guard the dumpsters this Saturday mm-hmm. as well.
Seen you there, Bruce. Yep. I've seen you there.
So how about tires? Did you mention?
We'll take tires.
You will take tires.
We will take tires. We would prefer not to because they get in the waste stream as well. And normally there's a charge.
Right.
So we'll take them, but we wouldn't encourage that behavior. We'd rather see you bring them out to the landfill and pay the fee.
Pay the fee.
So, yeah.
So, okay. Bruce, does Hazmat Day cost Recycle Utah something?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and okay. INSA would have the numbers better than I do. We see them, because I sit on the board, I see the annual numbers. It's subsidized really by Park City, Summit County, and the Snyderville Basin Water Reclamation District, mm-hmm. but that doesn't pay for all of it. Depending on the prices to recycle the paints and get rid of all the other things, it probably raises a half to two-thirds of the cost, and okay. the rest of it Recycle Utah picks up.
Okay.
Right. So if people want to support this endeavor, maybe a little $10 spot as they're driving through would be helpful.
Exactly. And there's some volunteers out there from the Rotary. And it's a little bit of a fundraiser for the Sunrise Rotary as well. So
bring a little cash if you can.
If you can.
Yes. Help supplement their efforts because they're doing a great favor you when you have a garage full
of lots of all these
old chemicals. And besides your garage, you know, the most at-risk room in your home is in your bathroom because there you have things above you in your medicine cabinet, like the old pharmaceuticals. You have your cosmetics and personal care products that have lots of chemicals in them that you might throw away.
And then
all the cleaning agents below the sink.
Yeah.
So the bathroom is a great source of opportunity.
Right.
Kitchen, bathroom, your shed, your garage. Look, just
breathe
through it.
Pesticides, herbicides, all those things.
Take all that.
Yeah.
And it's important to check in your garage and see if the stuff is out of date because it just keeps concentrating until you try and get rid of it. And if you're not at a properly certified hazmat program or you take it to the Summit County landfill and they take it from you, that stuff just keeps getting worse and worse and worse. And one of our great supporters actually is the Park City Fire District. And the firefighters will come over and help us collect the materials. And if you think about their job, if they were going to run into a burning building, the last thing they want to have is all this toxic chemicals and leftover stuff in somebody's garage.
Exactly.
So it's also a safety aspect.
They're on board on that.
Yep.
Yeah.
So what about the depository that's at the police station? I have brought medicines there that have, you know, that we finished or didn't need to finish for whatever reason and been able to drop it off there. What happens with that? Where does that go?
Well, that's part of the program that the pharmaceuticals are collected at the Hazmat Day, and they're also collected at the police department, and they have a certified disposal to get rid of them.
Yeah.
Back in the day, we used to collect them, and that probably wasn't a good idea. We really need the law enforcement officers to collect those materials because those are prescription drugs. One thing we will be doing that I forgot to mention that INSA brought up with me the other day was that we'll actually be collecting sharps at Hazmat Day.
Wow.
And there is no other facility in Summit County that collects sharps, and the box at the police station doesn't collect sharps.
It's a sharp.
It's a needle.
If you had
self injection, or you were diabetic, or you had some other, you know, if you were doing chemo, all those sharps,
all those things, be
collected and disposed of safely. So, it's a bit of a social gathering out there, just like dumpster days.
Mm-hmm.
We do our best not to judge. So
right. But it's important that when you arrive, and if you are, you know, you have all these various items. It's important to make sure that you explain exactly what is in your trunk or in the back of your SUV or in your pickup, so they can take proper precautions because sharps requires a great different degree of handling than a tire.
Right.
Or hey, I got this jar of picric acid that then the fire department comes in, and so it's important that you have an inventory.
Or at least
items.
In your mind, and if you don't know, I mean, we've got some folks in town that have inherited homes or may not be familiar with what's going on. If you don't know, say something, and we've got the technical folks out there can sort it out for you.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. All right. So that's Well, that's great. That's Hazmat Day. That's coming up. You've got a flyer. They'll be posted around town. You could probably go online
Absolutely.
To Recycle Utah and learn more about Hazmat Day.
Or come by you Saturday when I'm guarding the dumpsters for Dumpsters Day, and we'll talk. And
So that's simultaneous.
No. Dumpster Days is coming up this weekend. Next weekend is Hazmat.
Oh, Dumpster Days this weekend. Uh-oh. Okay.
I actually have another job besides this.
All right, so we got Dumpster Day, we got Arbor Day Friday, and then working backwards, Earth Day is tomorrow.
So, and let me get back on Dumpster Day.
Yeah.
It's an important one. That's going to be at RU. That'll be at Recycle Utah.
Yep.
And it's the same place that it's been last year. I don't remember the year before.
Same place.
Okay. Yeah.
And what am I throwing on Woodbine. And what am I bringing into that?
For that, you're bringing in two things. One, you're bringing in green waste from your yard. So trees, brush, old Christmas trees, lawn mowing, garden cleanup, all of those things.
Voles.
You can bring voles, but they're going to go in the other bin. One bin, the county actually collects and reuses it and makes compost out of it.
Okay,
so one of the reasons I'm standing out there, one of the other volunteers, is make sure that bin stays clean.
Right.
The worst thing you can do when you're recycling is contaminate one of the bins. And so we really make sure that we're getting a clean green bin. All the other things can go in the throwaway bin. We will not be able to take tires and we won't take mattresses. But anything else that you want to get rid of, your ex-husband, your ex-boyfriend, voles, all those things go away.
Those go in the compost pile.
And we'll be there to chat with you, so it's kind of fun.
All right, so that's Dumpster Days this Saturday. We got a few more minutes, and we had a bunch of other topics we're not going to be able to get to. But I want to talk about the NEPA process,
sure.
Because Mountain Accord is always is in the news more than voles, believe it or not.
Sure.
And a part of the Mountain Accord process, the next phase or so, would be something called a NEPA process. You've worked in the NEPA area. Spend a couple minutes talking about what that is and what it involves.
Well, I'm what they call a NEPA practitioner. And what I do when I'm working is I do a lot of writing NEPA documents for the Forest Service.
And NEPA
NEPA stands for the National Environmental Policy Act. And it's a federal law that was put into place by our friend Richard Nixon. That requires that federal agencies conduct a specialized environmental review on significant federal actions. So that's a lot of jargon in there, and there's a whole bunch of secret phrases and secret handshakes amongst NEPA people.
Hmm.
But that's what NEPA is, and you see it a lot when any federal agency is making a decision. But if it's not a federal decision, NEPA doesn't apply.
So for Mountain Accord, if one of the decisions was to, let's say, expand wilderness areas or set aside or build roads or other transportation grids through federal land, the NEPA process would be kicked in.
Those would be major federal decisions, and it comes down to even funding. If we were on private land and the federal government was going to give us some money, we'd probably end up having to do a NEPA process.
And typically what is involved in a NEPA process?
There's a full suite of things in the NEPA process, but it starts with what they call scoping and pre-scoping. And that process is a way of finding out what the public thinks and also what all the technical specialists thinks are going to be issues that need to be studied. Then there's the study period in what we call Chapter 3 of the NEPA document, which is the existing conditions. And it ranges everything from cultural resources and archaeology and environmental justice to air, water, all those resource issues.
Ecosystems. Habitat, et cetera. So if we're going to build a tunnel somewhere, the NEPA process would look at the impacts of that tunnel, not just on the on biosystems, but the watersed. And then culturally.
Cultural resources is a big one. And there's a couple other ones that are kind of subtle. And one would be environmental justice. So if you were siting a power plant and they were all ending up in communities with less income than higher income communities, you'd not be following the economic justice requirements.
Okay.
In some cases, they require consultation with respect to climate change. And that at Chapter 4, the Chapter 3 is what's happening. And Chapter 4 of all NEPA documents is what would happen to these things if this was implemented.
Who's the author of the document?
That's part of the issue the practitioners have on the Mountain Accord side is we really don't know what who the decision maker is or who the responsible agency is, whether it would be the Forest Service on National Forest System lands, it'd be the Department of Transportation for highway projects, it might be Federal Home, or what is the Federal Housing Authority, I've forgotten that one, excuse me. That jargon is missing.
Federal Housing Administration.
Yeah.
It might be BLM.
It might be BLM, exactly.
Right. Wow, so they all have, and the thing is, depending on what is found, discovered, those agencies may say, you know what, we don't really like this.
Right, or we have to come up with an alternative. So part of the NEPA process is to do scoping, clearly define what the alternatives are going to be that need to be studied, and then go out and study those things.
Okay.
So how do you become a NEPA expert?
There are actually college courses that you can do NEPA with. Mm-hmm. There's a couple of private companies that teach NEPA skills. Mm-hmm. I do a course on NEPA for the ski areas a couple times a year, and we talk about these issues. And a lot of it is just experience. There's a couple of really good companies that do NEPA. A lot of the NEPA work on the private consultant side, where I work, is done in what we call third party, which means the proponent or the applicant has no authority over what we're studying. We actually work for the agency, but we're getting paid by the applicant through the agency, and it's a pure third party, no contact relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Because the agencies are pretty underfunded. For example, I'm working out on a project in eastern Utah and looking for cultural resources, and we can't get a cultural resource person out there because they're all tasked to BLM oil and gas analysis.
Right. Okay. So there's
go ahead.
Lots of challenges. Well, we got to wrap up. Right. We can't go ahead, Bruce.
We need another hour.
Yes. We need to have you back to talk more about that and some of the wind energy projects you're on. And we'll have you back to talk about the results of Hazmat Day, because I'm always curious about what you guys collect and what trends you see over the years. Bruce Erickson, among other things, certified planner, president of Four Mountain Advisors. How do people get in touch with you?
Bruce at fourmountainadvisors.com, or call me.
Okay.
Or look for me out running or in my little orange vest at Dumpster
Days. At Dumpster Days. Perfect. Bruce, thanks so much for taking the time to join us this morning
to talk
about this thing. All right.
Thank you, Bruce.
Thanks. Let's take a break for a couple of sponsors. When we come back, we got a couple of news items and time to wrap up. It's This Green Earth.
Hi, I'm Inza from Recycle Utah. On Saturday, May the 2nd, we invite residents to our free Summit County household waste collection from 9 to noon in the Canyons parking lot. We accept paints and solvents, batteries and car fluids, fertilizers and oil, chemicals and CFLs, and electronic waste and pharmaceuticals. Recycle Utah is a local nonprofit protecting our watershed for now 25 years. We support KPCW. See you on Hazmat Day.
Hi, this is Charlie Taylor with New Park Terrace and Crandall Capital, delighted to support local radio and KPCW. New Park Terrace offers new townhomes with walkable access to shopping, dining, nightlife, public health club, the Park City Trail systems, and more. Located in the heart of New Park Town Center, more information can be found at newparkterrace.com or 435-602-9995.
This is Alyssa Daly with Republic Services, a proud sponsor of This Green Earth on KPCW. Republic Services, along with Historic Park City, is providing a community shred day with an industrial shredder to quickly shred all confidential documents. We will be on Sweet Alley by the liquor store and KPCW studios Friday, May 1st from 9 a.m. to noon.
Welcome back to This Green Earth. We only got a couple minutes, Carolyn. We're not going to get to all our news items. We'll have to save those for next week. But one I did want to talk about is a program that was just launched yesterday by Salt Lake County and Murray City. It's a rain harvest program where those two entities will pay or help supplement the cost of purchasing rain barrels for residents who want to purchase them. The price of the rain barrels will be just $40. Okay, I don't know what the regular price is, but the city and the county
around 80.
Is it? All right, so the city and county are kicking in to help purchase these rain barrels. So residents in those communities can buy a rain barrel for $40. And this is pretty important because the city, Salt Lake County, continues to experience drought related conditions. And this would be an interesting program to have up here, too. So we'll see if Summit County or Park City or mm-hmm. are interested in helping to supplement the cost of rain barrels for homes. And those are just basically barrels you put, collect water that comes off your roof or so that otherwise would go into the ground.
Rain harvesting, I think it's happening, 50 cities right now?
Yeah, all around the country, and they're very successful. Yeah. So that's the rain harvest program. Hey, it's time to wrap up. We got to take one more underwriter spot. We'll be right back.
Additional funding for programming on KPCW has been provided in part by Hideout Canyon, Master Plan Community on the Lake, info at hideoutcanyon.com, Long Reimer Weiniger Bepler, Estate Planning, Family Law, lrw-law.com, the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, and listeners like you.
Hey, it's time to wrap up. Let's thank our sponsors and underwriters who make this show possible. They include Recycle Utah,
Republic Services,
Vail Resorts,
Berkshire Hathaway Home Services,
and San Francisco Design. You can join us and like us if you want on Facebook at KPCW This Green Earth. You can also email us your thoughts and comments and ideas on this show and future shows at thisgreenearth@kpcw.org. Thanks, Carolyn, again for co-hosting. We'll have you back.
As always, enjoyed it greatly.
And let's remember, this is KPCW 91.9 FM Park City.
KPCW.
Only in... What's the line below, Carolyn? Only in Park City.
Only in Park City. Only on KPCW.
You got it. Good job. NPR News is next.